Welcome to Human Signal, the show for those who build. If you're just tuning in, you know, on Human Signal, we don't interview followers, we bring on architects. Today's guest erases the safe script and architects what doesn't exist. Meet Paul Wilson Jr., ecosystem strategist, supply chain builder, mentor, and community transformer. If you're a Gen Z builder, AI native, craving authenticity, allergic to hype, you don't want the hustle culture noise. You want the real behind the scenes signal. Today's show is for you. All right, let's welcome Paul Wilson Jr. to our show today.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. It's great to be here. Looking forward to this conversation.
Awesome, man. Listen, we go way back, you know, and our families known each other. Our wives known each other. We went to Auburn. I know you're from the West Coast, Cat. So you don't really understand what this whole Auburn connection thing was, right. But most definitely, Shanice is great, 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 great person. I've known her for a long, long time, and I know you have a beautiful family. And so thank you for coming on the show. We're diving in now. We're going to begin with our first question, talking to our guest, Paul Wilson Jr., with his plethora of knowledge today. So, Paul, let me set this up real properly for you. Gen Z is often cast as the digital native ghost. They are seen as threatening, misunderstood, and sometimes even feared by previous generations. But we know different. Paul, you built across systems and generations. Have you ever felt like a ghostbuster? Called in when nobody else could face the unknown?
Absolutely, and it's interesting. Early in my career, probably like many who get into corporate America in particular, right? We want the VP title, the corner office, C-suite, all that, right? And that was my goal, right? That's what I was planning for. But I started in an industry that was very old and very conservative, right? And literally the average tenure of the people at the company I worked with was 25 years, right? And people, and so people would look at you crazy if you basically didn't want to have a 25-year career in the same place. And so for me, I just couldn't see myself like 20 plus years from then, right? Barely trying to move up. Because the other thing is, it didn't matter how talented you were, everybody had to put in their time, right? Everybody had to pay their dues, which basically meant, you know, I don't care how brilliant your ideas are, how great you are, you still got to wait your turn. So after a while, that became frustrating to me. And I tried different methods, right, to engage that culture. I tried working on projects that weren't even part of my main job. So I did my main job and then did other projects to try to incorporate different types of thinking and different strategies. So one thing in particular, I'll tell a quick story. I helped literally build for our department a career mapping path, right? I never built a website in my life, literally built a website. I pulled in like help with from HR and all these other training departments and said, and basically, if you're in on our team or in our department, you could follow this path to see where your career could end up. It didn't guarantee you were going to get it, but at least you were aware and how you needed to develop. I did this big presentation in front of all the managers, and the answer somebody asked the question, why would we want them to know all that? Bruh, it blew me away. And I was seething on the inside. I had to kind of hold it in. But it just let me know that you don't care about other people's advancement. Because the only thing you can think about is if we tell them too much, they're going to want more. To me, that was such a closed-minded perspective. And it was no wonder why the turnover, again, of people, let's say, who had been at that company just 1 to 5 years, was the highest of anybody, right? It's almost like if you can make it past 5 years, you're probably going to be there for a long time. But they were losing so much talent. And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't in that same boat. So eventually, ended up resigning and starting my own business. But it was an eye-opener, right? To see that type of mentality, that type of perspective. And again, in my mind, I was doing something that wasn't just going to help employees. It wasn't just going to help individuals. It was going to help the entire team, right? The entire organization move forward, right? By giving people additional skills and insights and exposure. But all they could see was, we don't want people dreaming too big, right? Or aspiring for more than their current position. And I knew, you know what, this is not the place for me, you know, and I started making my plans, you know, to exit.
How long were you there?
For a total of 8 years. And I moved around. I had a couple of different positions while I was there. But I used my last position basically as my catapult, right, to my external job or my external business, right, the business that I launched. But again, my goal, like I say, when I was there, I would have been there a lot longer. And in some ways, you know, I probably stayed longer than a lot of other people who got frustrated and just left, right, sooner. But 8 years was a good foundation, right? I got to really understand corporate. But it also prepared me for, because my initial consulting business was to other corporations. So it also prepared me, right, for what I was going to encounter dealing with other corporations, because a lot of those decision makers too, right, were in that similar age range. So it gave me a different perspective on how to engage. So I learned a lot, but again, I also learned that, you know what, you got to go where you're celebrated, not where you're tolerated.
You know what, that's a great point. Going to where you're celebrated, and that's really important. You know, we've always been, you know, talked to, it's always good to be invited into the room.
Absolutely.
if you understand what I'm saying.
Definitely.
It's always good to know that. And it's always good to walk out feeling that you've done your part, you've done your piece, I contributed, I was not welcome, and I can't be my true self, right? I cannot be my true authentic self. And that's what's important. You and I have some similarities, you know, in that, you know, you want to bring your whole self to work all the time. I'm going to throw another question your way. You know, how do you see Gen Z builders' energy showing up, and how can the older generation partner rather than fear it? I know Gen Z like to call us unk. I got called unk for the first time 2 years ago. What's up, OG? What's up, OG? Right. Triple G? Oh, unk. Yeah. You know, but how do you think they have so much energy, right?
Yeah,
and how absolutely. Can we partner?
I can relate to you. A couple of weeks ago, I was somewhere and this young guy called me OG, bro. He knew it as a sign of respect, but for me, it was like, dog, I done made it to that point. I got all this gray, but still in my mind, that I'm still not there yet.
Right.
But, it took a little while to adjust from that comment. What I would say is, and I've heard this analogy a while ago, so I'll use it here. You know, fire. Think about fire, right? Fire in a fireplace, right, is comforting. Right. It brings people together. It's warming. It's all that. But fire in a forest, right, is dangerous, out of control, right, and literally will kill people. And so it's how do we, because again, even in the fireplace, you don't want to put the fire out, right? You want that fire to burn in the fireplace. So it's not that fire in and of itself, right, something we don't want. We just want it in the right context, right? And be able to harness that energy. And I think that's the balance with Gen Z. Absolutely love the talent, love the energy, right? It's how do we harness it? How do we get the most out of it? How do we pick their brains, right? How do we acknowledge them? And I think a lot of it is, you know, we want to acknowledge you for who you are, for what you're bringing to the table, but also let people know that even if I disagree with you, I'm not discounting you, right? And I think that's a fine line to walk because, again, sometimes us as the older generation, we have a tough time disagreeing with people, but we discount them too, as if all their ideas are crazy. So in essence, they're a crazy person, right? And that's just wrong, right?
Right, it is.
You know, we got to learn how to disagree constructively, right? Mm-hmm. And I always believe this, that the first idea is never the best idea, yeah. Right? It's like, okay, if you bring an idea to the table, if it doesn't work the way it was presented, let's develop it. Let's add to it, right? Let's shape it. Almost like a piece of wood, you turn into a sculpture, right? You're not going to stand a piece of wood up there and say that's a great piece of art. No, but the art started off as the wood, right? And so I think that's how we got to think about Gen Z and the older generations too. So I think it goes both ways, because again, many people will give respect when they're given respect. But in this generation, people have such short tempers, right? If you're disrespected, they're not going to respect anything you got to say, even if it's the right stuff, right? Even if it's the right information. If you have disrespected and discounted them, they will shut down, shut you out, right? And not don't hear anything you have to say. So we got to do a better job across the board of building. But of course, the older generation typically is the one inviting, right? Because you're the hiring managers, right? You're a hiring team. You're the one inviting them into your home, if you will, into your business. Right. And so it's how do you get the most out of them and still hold them accountable, right? Still challenge them, but also understanding how do you get the most out of them. And I'll bring up my son, for example. He's not quite Gen Z, but he's very goal-oriented, right? And like numbers-oriented. So if I'm going to challenge him, hold him accountable, discipline him, I got to like set a goal for him, right? And say, you got to hit this target, right? And again, for him, that's the way he learns. That's the way he's activated. But for me, it's how I'm trying to get something accomplished out of him, right? And right. So it's how do we understand people? How do we, you got to take the time. You got to want to know somebody, right? You got to want to get to know people. You got to want to know what makes them tick, right? What buttons to push. And I think the better we can do that, the more we can actually harness that talent, right? Harness the energy, harness the ideas to benefit everybody versus, you know, well, they don't flow like I flow. They don't roll like I roll. So we shut them down, discount everything. And then we just put labels on them. Oh, they're lazy. They don't want to learn. You know, they don't want to, you know, fit in. Well, did you make the environment such that they want to fit in, right?
Right.
Felt welcome, that they felt,
right,
you know, engaged, you know, to share, you know, what they have to offer.
You know, you bring up, wow, thank you so much. I'm gonna start here because I know there's a lot of fear from the older generation and dealing with Gen Z is because they're afraid of what they're going to say, sure, right, and how they're going to respond to stuff. One of the things for me is I had to understand this whole concept of ghosting. At first, I didn't get it, right? Because, you know, I was raised the old Southern way. You know, you make a commitment, you show up, you follow through, all the way through it. I'm curious because I know what I think I know what ghosting is, and I will share it. But I'm curious to know what you think ghosting is.
So I'll share with you what I believe is the reason why people ghost, right? Because basically I have stopped communicating. I stopped paying attention, right? Without letting you know that I've stopped communicating and paying attention or responding, right? And I just bounced. But I had to think back to my college days, man. I did that, right? And I'll say, so I was working a job. I was actually working a job on my college campus. And I worked it like up until like Christmas time. We had Christmas break, right? And everybody goes home for break and we came back. And I, you know, decided I didn't want to work anymore, right? And so I never contacted them on the campus, right, where that job was. I just came back to campus and went to work, right? Really? Yeah. And it's not something I would have normally done, right? Right. And then I like probably 2 weeks later, I see the manager of the office walking down the sidewalk and I had to pass her. And it was just like, and I felt like so bad. But in the moment, if I remember back, I almost, now this is for me, and again, I can't speak to everybody. It was, I didn't want to disappoint them by telling them I wasn't coming back. So I kind of shirked the responsibility, right? I didn't say I wasn't accountable, but it was more so, I didn't want them to be disappointed that I wasn't coming back. But again, of course I did make it worse, right? But in my mind, it was, man, if I tell them, you know, and what's going to happen, right? So I think a lot of times when we think about ghosting, it's, shirking responsibility, shirking accountability, but it's like, what's going on in their minds that sometimes makes them think, if I admit this, or if I share this, or if I tell you I can't do X, Y, Z, how am I going to be treated? And I think so a lot of it is fear, right? It's fear-based that if whatever I say, whatever I tell you, you're not going to agree with it, or I'm about to get beat up for it. So let me just avoid that beating. And I'm avoid this conflict. So a lot of it's conflict, right? It's conflict avoidance is what it comes down to, which we know is not healthy long-term, but also where did they learn that conflict avoidance, right? And what have they learned in the past when they have addressed things and the way the response came back at them is something like, well, I don't want to go through that again. So I'd rather deal with, you know, the uncertainty of what happens after I ghost versus what I believe maybe the certainty of getting beat up if I have to share, right, what needs to be shared. So that's in my thought process, I think a lot of what's going on, because again, across the board, man, we just don't communicate well anymore to people, you know, back across the, especially intergenerationally, we do not communicate well. And Gen Z would, you know, would rather just avoid the conflict, right, then have to deal with, you know, whatever they think they're going to have to deal with, right, by sharing whatever, you know, bad news or whatever, you know, they might have to share.
Yeah. You know what? Thank you for that. That is a great perspective on it, a great take. For me, when I think about ghosting, you know, by training, I'm a social scientist, right? So it's just so much when I unpack it. And what helps me is my wife being a college professor. So she's enthroned in a lot of the Gen Z and the younger population in their interaction. So, you know, and just throwing it off on her because I'm trying to understand, you know, historically, contextually, right, inner, outer, right, environmental and all of these things. And for me, I surmised it to inauthenticity. I think they sniff it, right? And this is me. I don't like talking in generalizations because I really like to know people. But for me, when I look at the embodiment, the whole of the generation, as we call Gen Z, I think there for them is an entire fear of being, you know, not authentic. And for them, when they see it, it's a visceral response, right? When they sniff it out, and thus they ghost.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, this is what you were saying now.
Right.
Are they prepared to, you know, or do they fully understand the causal and the cause and effect of ghosting? Now that makes you flaky,
right,
you know,
right.
with predetermined norms, right? Mm-hmm. Normal cultural behavior. And ghosting just took everyone by surprise.
Right.
And,
right.
Whoa. Yeah. And then here come the labels, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Here come the labels. I think we in the U.S. we have a tendency to label, mislabel.
Yeah.
We understand. But you know, thanks for sharing. So I mean, I may catch some heat.
Right.
You know, may catch some heat behind my definition, but I just really think that it's out of fear of being, you know, not authentic and not being real. And then when they see it, they don't want to associate themselves with it, and so then they flight, they run.
Right,
it's their fight or flight response, so they run from it.
Yeah, and it's typically flight, right?
Yes.
Right, but
yes.
And that's the part of the conflict avoidance, right, or the issue avoidance, you know, from that standpoint.
Thank you, Paul, for all your feedback, your wonderful feedback on the first question, set of questions we had. We had some real dynamic answers out of that. And this segues way over into my non-safe questions, you know, that I like to ask, right, as a host, but not try to beat my guest up too bad. Paul Wilson Jr., you personify, and you market, and you put yourself out there, and you talk about you are an architect, okay?
Yeah.
And that you're not a fixer, right, or a follower.
Right.
So with that framing, why do we need new systems, Mr. Architect? What's broken about legacy structures and entrepreneurship and community work?
So what's broken is this ultra pursuit of unicorn status. I put it like that, right? And of course, you know, anything associated, right, with Silicon Valley and techpreneurs and billionaires and everyone, you know, chasing after that elusive, you know, investment that can get me over this $1 billion. I think that's what's broken, right? Because let's be honest, 90% of businesses, probably 95% of businesses, right, are never going to be unicorns, right? And they don't have to be. They shouldn't have to be. But sometimes when we elevate these certain types of status, right, that everyone has to pursue the same goal is what's broken, right? And I always think about it like this. What let's start with your purpose, right? What are you here on the planet to do, and what are you supposed to be accomplishing? And I even put in this context, if your purpose only needs $500,000 to get done, guess what you should be pursuing, right? $500,000, right? In that context. Exactly. If your purpose, and I believe given by God,
right,
is a $500 million purpose. And again, I'm not talking about your value as a human, right? I'm talking about what you're bringing to the world and the amount of impact you're supposed to be having, right? If we put in that context. So to me, is the one size fits all is what's broken, right? The everyone's pursuit, right? And I shouldn't say everyone, right? But so many people's pursuit, right, of these really unattainable goals. And then again, like I said, we like to tell everybody, oh, you can be anything you want to be, right? You can do whatever you want to do, right? You can aim for the stars and land on the moon, right? And all that is true. We want people to dream big, but it also has to be done in context, right? It also has to be done in understanding those who have gotten successful. What was the really process of them getting to that success? It wasn't just that they were smarter, right? It wasn't just that they, you know, went to the right school. There are so many things that went into it. And yes, we can learn lessons from successful people, businesses, ventures, what have you. But to try to take one person's story or journey and lay that over everybody else, and then people either feel like or they want to fit in that cog, right? That's what's broken. And that's why we got to really rethink. And that's why I really talk about from a purpose base, right? Who are you as an individual? What are you bringing to the world? Who are you supposed to be impacting? What burden do you have, right? What problem are you supposed to be solving? And then you build your business model around that, right? And again, if the goal is just to get to $1 billion, it's probably the wrong motivation, right? Now, if you build something that has $1 billion worth of impact, absolutely, guess what? You're probably going to be rewarded for that. Right. But if the goal is just to get to a number because you see other people getting there, or to get a type of capital, whatever it is, just because you think that's the way to go, that's what's broken. So I think we really got to rethink our, you know, financial structures and financial systems. I mean, the overall financial industry doesn't help much with this either. Right. Because so much is geared towards, oh, well, I want the company that has 10X or 15X or 100X, or I'm not investing in anything else. So I think we need investors with more of a social conscience, right? I think we need people who have means, right? That can use their means to bring transformation to a different group of people. I was having a great conversation just literally earlier today of a gentleman, and we talked about oftentimes a lot of these business programs focus on early stage entrepreneurs, like brand new startups, or they focus on the companies that are already growing, trying to get them bigger. But there's this big swath of businesses in the middle that usually get ignored. And these can be six-figure businesses that can hire 4 or 5 people, right? But there's typically programs don't focus on them. There's really oftentimes limited funding that's available for them, right? And very oftentimes mentorship is usually few and far between, because those aren't always superstar companies. But guess what? They're the silent engine behind the economy. Right, that's keeping our economy going, but oftentimes resources aren't directed towards them. So those are some of the things that, you know, just kind of breaking apart and breaking away from this, hey, everybody has to be this unicorn. Because again, even if you look at a successful venture capitalist portfolio, right, they may have had one unicorn and 99 failures, but their portfolio will be look successful because they had the $1 billion unicorn, right? But for the majority of communities, we can't afford to have 99 out of 100 businesses fail, one succeed, and say we're successful as a community, right? That doesn't work. The only place that does work is the venture capital industry. It doesn't work anywhere else, right? And so I think we got to flip that model around to say, how do we create systems, right, that allow more people to be successful? And those who rise above, absolutely. We want to go the extra mile or have the extraordinary invention. Absolutely, we want to help take them as far as they can. But we also have to recognize that it's okay that that's not the majority of people, right? And it's okay, you know. But what is the extremely valuable benefit, right, that this big swath of businesses kind of in that middle growth area are bringing to our society, to bring in the communities, right, bringing financial, social, you know, value across the board, and oftentimes, again, they're ignored. And so to me, those are some things that need to be fixed, switched around. And again, and without, because I know some people may look at that and say, well, that sounds like socialism. No, I'm not talking about socialism.
When you talk to, if people know the history of Silicon Valley and how it was started, I tell everybody start on Google and Google Silicon Valley and the United States of America World War II.
Gotcha.
Start there. Yeah, that is the very definition of socialism, Silicon Valley. But don't get, listen, we're going to have a whole separate show.
We would.
About that, right. And a lot of unpacking in this. I mean, absolutely. You know, a couple of nuggets that come out of that that just jump out to me, and that is value systems, right? Yes,
absolutely.
Value systems are inherently broken, right? We grew up in the Gordon Gekko era. Greed is good,
right?
Absolutely. Greed is good, and now we have the Zers that are coming into that are going to be basically, listen, man, I tell everybody, I said, man, my wife and I, we're in the third and fourth quarter of our careers, right? We have these Zers that's in their first quarter, right? I don't want to live in a world with all these broken systems, right? As an older person. So I extend the olive branch out to the Zers, say, hey, come get this knowledge that we gotten because we're the turnkey generation, we were the forgotten generation. We would call all kinds of names, you remember? We were called slackers, we were called lazy, and all this sort of things. And then, you know,
you call X the unknown, right? Yeah, all this stuff.
Right. So, you know, out of that, we became the hustlers, we became the grinders, right? We pounded out the mud, you know, we made it happen. And so now we have all this wealth of knowledge we want to give to the Zers. Right? A lot of us want to mentor and help, but we just like double dutch. We don't know when to jump in, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Even in that, it's like the value systems are broken, right? Yeah. For me, I'd rather have 10 successful $1 million companies, right, than one successful $100 billion company because of scale, right? Because of the 10X, because of the scale that it's going to have, like you're saying, on the impact of the community, right? You know, that's a whole different other conversation, but in that whole messy, right?
It is. No, and I agree. And I'm a capitalist. Let me just say that. However, I don't believe that capitalism at all costs. And I think that's what's broken about capitalism today. It's a winner take all. You know, I don't care how many dead bodies I leave along the way, right? Only one person can win, right? To me, that's the broken aspect of capitalism, you know, that is... I believe capitalism is redeemable, but the way capitalism is operating right now, it's almost like you can only stress the system so long before it breaks, right? And I think we are really close to that because, again, it's this winner take all, win at all costs. I don't care, right, if everybody else is wiped out as I get my billions, right? Because, again, I'd want to be a billionaire. I'm not going to lie. I'd want to be a billionaire. That'd be great. Right, but if I wiped out the planet to get to my billion, what was it worth? Right, what was the point?
Oh, right? You're gonna go to space with everyone else.
Yeah, well, there you go. Right, we're gonna destroy this planet so you can go to another planet and destroy that one too. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead, let's go on.
See, that brings up my next question. That brings up my next question. I'm talking about, you know, we talked about ghosting, right? And we talk about what's broken in these corporate systems, and then we talk about, as a lens, how Zers look at everything, right? So now Zers are getting ready to, quote unquote, inherit the earth, but now they're seeing all these broken systems. They see unauthentic people, right? They see corporate greed, and then now they're stepping back. And it was like, wow, where's the transparency and where's the collaboration, you know, in all of this? So setting up my second question in this part of our interview, you know, our listeners, you know, they build in public, right? They get flack, you know, for coders. They get flack for glitchy edits or, you know, YouTubers or content creators, you know, the perfect video, right? Yeah. Or the perfect stream. They, you know, get criticized for things being raw, right? That's why when I throw a video out, it's all raw, untouched, right? Yeah. I don't care. Bring the critics, you know. I welcome the critics.
Right.
That's just me. But a lot of our listeners, they are tired of the corporate polish, right? And they want the real. You know, I talked about that. The real, the messy. They want in the arena stuff. So leading up to my question, how do you lead when the world expects optimization and perfection?
You know, it's interesting. I was watching a podcast the other week, and these were successful business people, and in terms of they've even been successful online and all this stuff. But they were talking about how non-AI strategies to win, right, in the marketplace. So it's interesting. So one of the things that they talked about was unedited video, right? And how, and it was funny because they said, well, I do very polished videos, but also do unedited things. Depends on what I'm doing. And I think the ability to almost be able to flow in both directions, right? To say, yes, I can be professional. I can put the extra polish on if I need it. But also, if depending on the message, I just want to be raw. I'm going to just show you who I am for real, right? But I can go both ways because I have technical skills, but I also have authenticity. And I think, again, it's a fine balance, right? But it's the ability to kind of go back and forth in that way. And it's funny. I even look at commercials now. You may have noticed it too. Like some corporations, they're literally using, right, videos that they may be influencers, just people who posted online, like their raw reactions to stuff, and they'll literally incorporate that into their commercial, right? Because there's something about the authentic, right, response that we have as humans that sometimes is captured on film, other times it's not, that still is a draw for people, right? So yes, we want the Disney magic, right? But we also like, you know, that I can relax, I can lay back, I can kick back. I just have a conversation with my boys, right? We can chill, and I don't want the cameras on. I want the lights on, right? And this is just who we are. But I think that just shows the diversity of us as humans, right? The right. dynamic, right? Way that we just express ourselves, depending on what we want at what one point in time. And if you can't pivot when it's necessary to pivot, you're going to be very challenged, right? Right. If you can only do it one way. So if you can only be raw, right, there's some times that you may need to be polished, right? And if that's all you can, and that's the only way you know how to be, there's some doors that could close to you, right?
But I'm keeping it real, son.
Yeah, exactly.
The real beat.
Right, exactly. Well, you keep it real and keep it broke, right? That's for a lot of people, right? Because they only know how to keep it real, right? And sometimes it's going to work with a certain audience. But other audiences right. who, and here's the thing, sometimes the audience who are writing the checks, right, need to see something different. And if you don't know how to pivot, and to me, some of the best pivots, and then I don't know how people feel about it, are 80s and 90s rappers who are actors today.
Oh, of course, right? Ice-T.
You know what I mean? Ice-T, Ice Cube, Queen Latifah, right? There's a whole long list. But if you would have seen it back then, right, because that time hip-hop wasn't even mainstream, right? It was kind of this fringe kind of music. Right. But now you see these individuals who the individuals have become mainstream. And some people are just getting new, who are new to them now, had no idea, right, that they used to be these hip hop artists, right, back in the day. They're like, really? Yeah, that's how they started, right? But they understood how to pivot, right, along the way, right? And you see many of these artists now too, who are now becoming investors, right? And so yes, they may have a stage persona, but backstage and off the stage and in the boardroom, they're not wearing their chains, right? Or they might be, but a lot of them, they're going to put on a suit depending on who they meet with, right? And then after the meeting, they throw the suit off. And then guess what? They're still being authentic. They're not being inauthentic just because they changed their outfit. They're not being inauthentic just because they changed their clothes, right? So it's how do I understand how to flow in different environments, still be myself, still represent myself, still I can still be authentic. And again, and I'll say this too, if the only way you can say you're authentic is by the clothes that you wear, I would question that authenticity. Because then you're basically saying it's the clothes, it's not you, right? It's the clothes, right? And again, so it's some stuff we got to wrestle with.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
we got to be more flexible and be able to pivot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you answered my second part of my question here, you know, because the second part of my question was tactical moves that Gen Z can in the builder class, and they're looking to gather allies. And you brought it out. You pulled it out. Flexibility. Right.
Yeah.
And what also, too, what I'm hearing is being comfortable in your own skin. Right. Mm-hmm. Being who you are. You know, I talk about in my writings in on my LinkedIn that you can go and visit and look at it. I talk about the red pill. Right. The red pill protocol. Right. How my sister Nicole and I, we grew up, you know, with red pills. But then I went to college and then I tried the blue pill and I had a visceral effect to the blue pill. So when you grow up knowing everything is raw and real and all that, you just can't lull yourself to sleep, right? But it's all about being comfortable in your own skin. And that's something that took some coaching for me, learning how to adapt, right? Learning with, I can be real at all times. See, I'm being real right now, but it's a level of my realness, whether I'm on level 1 or level 10. right? The problem exactly. is a lot of folks go from 0 to 10, you know, and be on 10 all the time. But right. no, you all need time. To dial it back, you know, down right. to level 1, level 2, but that's being comfortable in your own skin, right? So kind of talk to us about, you know, the different personas of funds and yeah. making sure that you as a builder match up with the fund's persona. And you yeah. may be mismatched, and that's where you're probably not having some success. Can you talk briefly about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And what a lot of people don't understand, and I don't think they approach it this way, is two things. One thing you said, each fund has its own persona, right? Each fund has the types of businesses it wants to invest in, right? And sometimes you were trying to put a square peg in a round hole by pursuing investors or organizations who you don't fit their profile, right? Which means you didn't do your homework in advance, right? You know, and that's on one side. The other side of it is really understanding that, again, investors are in the investment business to make money, right? Their primary job is not to grow your company. And sometimes, again, I think we don't, and I say we as a community, because I've heard enough conversation, right? I can say we with love. Don't approach investors or even sometimes banks or anybody else as I'm here to help you make money, right? And sometimes the approach is, oh, you need to invest in my business because of, and I have a long list of reasons why you should invest in me. But I often don't lead the conversation with, I'm here to make you money, right? Because that's why they're in business. That's the point of the investment business, is to make money.
The value proposition,
exactly. Or even if you're just going to a bank for a loan, guess mm-hmm. what? They're lending out money because they're going to make money off the loan that they lent out. They're going to bring in more than they gave out, right? And so, but we go with the approach of, I'm here for support. I'm here for a handout. I'm here because, you know, I need you to help me grow my company. We've already started off with the wrong premise. Right. And again, while all those other things are true in the back of our mind, that isn't shouldn't be how we lead. That's not how, you know, we should approach these entities and their organizations, because, again, the majority of them, again, the dollar signs is what leads their approach. Right. So right. That's just the reality. Right. And again, there's going to be other organizations that are going to be uniquely positioned around social enterprises. Right. Let's, for example, well, then if your primary role or desire is to have a social impact, make sure you go pursue the social enterprises who you know are aligned with that. Don't go pursue right the financially motivated organization with your social enterprise, because it's a mismatch, right? It's a mismatch up front, and now you're trying to make oil and water mix, and you get mad at them because they don't mix with you. Well, their website told you up front they weren't going to mix, right? So I think we got to take a different approach, and I get it. Like, there is not enough capital for us. So I get the frustration. I get the anger, right? And I get it. But again, I think also we haven't approached this exactly accurately as we should have in many cases, right? But in other cases, again, we got to find the organizations that do support the causes. And then the third category, which I hope to be a part of, hopefully sooner than later, is we just need more organizations who desire and want to fund, right, and have a broader perspective than, yes, financial returns. But in addition to that, here's some other things we want to see happen. We do need more of those organizations, right, who have the means, who have the capital, who are going to invest, right, in big dreams that have, I say, triple bottom line, however you want to say it, or double right. bottom line, right, the social and the financial return that comes with it. We absolutely do, because there's not enough those organizations out there. And I think it's a lot of hard work. And I won't say impossible, nothing's impossible, but it's a very difficult work, let's say, to take the primarily financially focused organization to try to get them to become something that they're not, right? We got to find some other strategies and right. some other means.
Right, right. It's a mismatch in a lot of that. You're talking about alignment. You're talking about, centeredness, right, and focus and preparedness. A lot of things that, you know, that goes in behind the scenes to those big announcements, yeah. right, of, you know, securing X amount for this and that and, you right. know, and doing things. And a lot of advice, you know, that was in that, you know, what I'm hearing, you know, you building up as you were responding to that, you know, the need of a roadmap, right? Mm-hmm. You need to know where you're going, right? You need to point A to point B, point C, and beyond, right? I might be a Gen Z builder, right? Listening, who might code at night, right? Who's launching a Discord and helping a cause or sharing failures in public. But, what's my roadmap?
Where am I heading with this?
Yeah, where I'm heading with this, or typical business term, I guess, is how are you planning to scale? Right? Absolutely. What is your ICP and how do you find the scale? And, where is this going? Right? What's the end product? And then what are the returns? What's the capital outlay? What are the milestones? It's a lot that goes into it, right? For balance, impact, and for self-preservation as well. Like you were saying, the corporation or the entity, the money entity, their self-preservation is because they want to make money.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
They exist because that's what they do. Exactly. And that's very important. Do you have any final advice in this particular segment for builders who are building without a roadmap? Any final advice?
Yeah, absolutely. And I heard this on the podcast. So I'm going to give this gentleman his props when I say this. Marcus Rogier, I think is his name. But a couple of things he said that really, to me, tie into this. He said, for every level, there's new learning that's needed. Right. And so as you're going into these new spaces, right. And one of the things he said is, and then you have to position yourself you're at a level zero in terms of your amount of ignorance about that topic, right. Or about that situation. Because if I'm ignorant about it, I need to be hungry to learn as much as possible. But if I come at it from a position of arrogance, and even if I've been successful doing something else, but now I'm over here doing something new, and I just assume that, okay, I'm already have other types of success over there that automatically translates over here. So now my arrogance keeps me from learning what I need to learn, right? And then that one other thing he said, and I'll wrap this up, is every new level has a new language, right? So there's terminology, right? All those terms you just ran down, right? Right. If you're a founder looking and going to pursue an investor, and if they don't understand what you just said, right, a couple of seconds ago, you don't need to be talking to an investor.
No.
Right. Go figure that stuff out first, because again, it's like y'all are talking two different languages. And if they know now, because part of the investment game, culture, whatever you want to call it, is the trust in the founder. Not just you got a great idea, the trust in the founder. Here's it. The trust that the founder is an expert in what they're talking about. They're an expert in not only in the product that they're selling, but the market that they're selling to. Right. If you're not evoking that trust from the people that you're trying to get money from, right? So you might as well just shut it down. Again, doesn't matter how brilliant your idea is, if you're not able to speak their language, right? And in a way, again, that attracts them, that excites them, that encourages them. And so, yeah, so we all have to, again, when we're in new spaces, let's pretend we're the most ignorant person in the world in that space. And now let's be intentional about learning. Right, about being hungry about learning and growing so we can become competent, and not just assume that because we're competent in something else, that competency automatically trans over and I'm automatically an expert in this new area. So, yeah, we got to be very humble, right, when it comes to that.
So, wow. Did y'all hear that, young people? Did y'all just hear what he said? And I'm going to frame it in a language for Gen Z, because your generation, and I love it. I absolutely love it. You are digitally native, right? That is your language of love, but it can be off-putting.
And even threatening. Yeah.
Even threatening. So you have to take a self-evaluation, but also to be reflective, right? Be empathetic and saying, ask yourself, how is the other person feeling? Right. And then if I humble myself in the way that I want to learn, because, yeah, I'm awesome with tech, but I suck at this.
Right.
For me, I've always gotten better. I love feedback. I don't want to hear how good I am. I want to hear when I suck.
Right.
That's the goods. Right? Right. That's how Tobias Floyd got better. Right. Yeah. Hearing how he sucked.
Yeah. Right.
How I failed, right? And what's the lessons in it? And then I go sit in that failure, and then I learn from it, and then I rise, brother.
Yeah.
I rise up bigger, better, stronger, wiser, faster, right? And then I go to the next thing and I'm like, okay, I suck. Right? And how can I get better at this? And that's the value in that. So Gen Z, the value in it is we know y'all are awesome with tech, and that's why you're in the room, right?
Absolutely.
Take on a learner's attitude.
Yeah.
Right? Take on a, let me pay attention to stuff that I don't know, right? And then let's not be so hypercritical, right?
Right.
Hypercritical on the old folks in the room who don't understand all the tech stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So just be a little patient, but you don't understand, they don't understand the tech stuff, but you might not understand the money stuff.
Right, right.
Vice versa, right?
We all have something to learn, you know? We all have something to learn. And from each other, right? We all have something to learn from each other.
Exactly. So we're going to be ready to close the show out with our final two questions with our wonderful guest here, Paul Wilson Jr., who is so full of wealth and knowledge. We may have to invite him back to the show again. I know we're closing out season one, but season two will start up. I'll have my sister as my co-host counterpart. You know, she is the other part of the Red Pill. She is the OG, the OG of OGs, the original architect. You know, Nicole Floyd Turner, please like and subscribe to her stuff and find her on LinkedIn. She is an awesome personality and she is a boss.
Nice.
And I'm glad to call her my sister. So we get ready to close this out with two questions, right? On the practical side, the practical tools. So we talked about, you know, in earnest, you know, what it takes, right, to be flexible, what it takes to be, you know, put yourselves in a position to obtain funding, right? We talked about that process of breaking ourselves down, right, and having a learner's attitude and being open and receptive to feedback, good or bad. You know, I like the bad. I don't want to hear the good. I want the bad.
Right.
Don't couch me. You know, just give me the bad. But so to everyone listening, right, this platform is your workshop. Heroic Visibility Badge and all. We have the Heroic Visibility Badge that I issue, and Paul, for being a guest today, I'm going to issue a Heroic Visibility Badge you for your feedback and for giving to the community. Okay, and we talk about the PSA framework, which is the presence signaling architecture. It's all about having presence, and it's a whole thing that embodies what we're talking about here today. These are not buzzwords. This is the core of what my work is about and the core of human signal. So they are shields for building in public, right? I teach the public how to protect themselves, right? Publicly, right? Protect their work by publishing publicly, right? Put your stuff out there, put the timestamps with the computers, right? Take screenshots, your phone records, all that stuff. So tools for sovereignty amid all the noise. So Paul, here's my question. How do these tools change the game for young architects?
Great question. So one thing, and I'm thinking, you know, as Gen Z and other young generations, right, those are oftentimes currently the last hired and first fired, right? And companies have a lot less patience. A lot doesn't have to do with the talent. It has to do with their interpersonal skills, right? Some of the other soft skills. So that's the first thing I would say is, where's the gap in your interpersonal and soft skills? To your point, we were talking earlier about, you're bringing all this digital nativity and these digital skills. That's not what the companies are firing people for, because they don't have those. It's the other thing. So how can you get more emotional intelligence, right? How can you be a better communicator? How can you be more effective at doing that? How can you be a problem solver and help to resolve conflicts versus, right, you talk about taking everything so personally, now you create a conflict because you didn't like the feedback, right? It's all these other soft skills that are critical. And here's something else, again, very practical to think about. When you get hired by a company, depending on the size, right, go read their annual report. Go read their press releases. And here's the thing to really hone in on. What are their financial goals for the year, right? And how does your position help the company reach their goals? And then break it all the way down. What are your department's goals? What are your manager's goals, right? And how does your role help your manager or your team or your department accomplish its goals? Because I think that's the disconnect, as if you know, the company hired you and you're here to do, you know, you did them a favor by taking the job, right? And you can just come in and do whatever you want to do. That's not how the world works, right? In anywhere, right? And even people say, well, I'll just go start my own business. I don't have a boss. Well, guess what? Your clients become your boss, right? Even when you're an entrepreneur, right? You're always, we are always going to have to answer to somebody, right? Whether it's in our company or outside of our company, right?
At the house, my wife, the boss.
There we go. Hey, be bright, right? And when your kids get old enough, they try to become the boss too. I mean, all that, right? Always. And ultimately, I answer to God, right? So there's always somebody I'm submitted to, right? But it doesn't mean I'm invaluable. And that's the thing about, we got to stop conflicting these things that just because I'm submitted to somebody, also I have no value. That's not true. You have value and you're still follow a leader, right? Both can be true at the same time. So I think it's those things. You're not making a choice there. But it's also a demonstration, right, of how you're going to bring value. In this case, to a manager, to an organization, because here's the thought process. Eventually, if you do go start a business, guess what your primary goal is? To solve problems and to add value to clients. Right. So guess what? You're just practicing that now. Think about it like that. If you want to venture on your company, great. Practice now, right, what you eventually want to do later, because you're going to have to solve problems, right? You're going to have to work through conflict, right? You're going to have to deal with difficult people, right? You're going to run into roadblocks and problems that you got to figure out how to solve. So it's a different context, but it's the same type of things you're going to have to deal with. So this is a great opportunity where somebody else is paying you, right, to learn, get on the job training, not just in a skill set, but in your whole person, right, from that standpoint.
You know, you're bringing up some very good points that I wrote a piece on. You can find it on LinkedIn when I talk about, I call it a truce between the generations, right, between Gen X and Gen Z, all because of we've seen the systems get dismantled, yeah. Right? We've seen the job training programs get dismantled. We've seen mentorship get thrown out the window. So you have a workforce now that are hidden jobs, right, that are lacking these programs, but they need it. But, you know, now they have the responsibilities. A lot of our population here on who listen to Human Signal, they are becoming managers and leaders within these corporations. And then with the boomers exiting out, things have just been thrown in the laps, but they haven't been trained. And us as Xers, we understand that, right? Because we've been neglected. So this is another form of neglect. So, but lining up and gaining a mentor or inside your job or outside your job with another Gen Xer, right, who can assist you in this process, right, a transitioning, right, who can help you, you know, navigate, you know, all these different things, right? Like I said, you may be strong in this area, but listen to Gen Z, right? Because we have some wisdom and knowledge and nuggets, right, that can help you, right? We know where the bodies are. We know how the bodies got there, right? Because we were around when all this stuff went down, right? Exactly. Because we heard from the boomers, won't you just optimize yourself? Won't you reinvent yourself, right? Yeah. When they were just dismantling all these systems so they could stay in power. But that's a whole nother thing, right? But, you know, to burn in the playbooks, right, into building what's next, right? You know, and just building in public, which is all important. It's about collaboration.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
It's about working and teaming together, you know. And this partnership that I see between Gen X and Gen Z is going to be dynamic, right? And that that our listeners out here that are in these, that are either Gen X and don't know how to jump into the double dutch either, right? Right. We're asking, you know, Paul and I are asking you, right, to take a look on the inside of yourself, right? And then be reflective and see how it, remember what it was to be young, right? Absolutely. In their shoes and not having the support systems in place, right? And being told, we were being told to do X, Y, and Z, but they're not being told anything.
Right.
All they're hearing is criticism. Absolutely. They're lazy, they ghost and all this, and they feel all this pressure and weight of the world on them that everything is broken, we have to fix it, but we really don't know how, right? And vice versa. Yeah. That's some very, very, very good advice.
And one thing, one more thing I'll add, and you, when you mentioned something, like all these systems have been dismantled, and that's why you got to create your own system, right? And in particular, I just, one example is mentorship, right? So one thing I did back in my career, and this is before I left my company, I did informational interviews, right?
Oh,
and
if, wow.
If you never know what that is, so I was able to go and I set up meetings with individuals who, in particular, they were higher up than I was, in some cases, several layers up, and VPs and all that. And I just wanted to learn about their job. So I didn't come asking them for anything other than I had a list of questions, and I literally interviewed them about their job, about their career path, right, about the direction that they went on. Because sometimes it may be hard to find a mentor, because some people, they may shy away from mentors because they think, oh, how much time is that going to take? But right. One informational interview may take 30 minutes, right? And most people say, I can give you 30 minutes, right?
You know, I can't give you coffee time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I did like 20 of those, right? Or however many I did, and I had all my answers down, right? And I wish that at that time I computerized it. I didn't, but I still had it documented, and I learned so much from that. So I would say, like I said, although the systems have been dismantled, and LinkedIn makes it even easier. They don't have to work for your company.
Man,
right?
Listen.
Right. You know what I mean? Just go on LinkedIn and look for the titles and look for the people. And typically, you're only 1 or 2 degrees away. You probably know somebody who knows somebody and say, hey, can right. you introduce me? All I want to do, I'm not going to ask anything in terms of don't give me, I want to talk to you for 30 minutes, right? I just got some questions I want to ask. And to me, most people, if you're genuinely just hungry in that way,
they'll say, yeah.
The time,
they'll say yes.
They will, because again, here's the thing, you're going to ask them about them. Most people like talking about themselves, right?
Facts.
Most people
Facts.
Like talking about themselves and their Facts. Journey and right. their path and their stories.
Right.
And so if you show that level of interest, and again, not asking them to do anything for you, just say, I want to learn from you, take a little bit of time, I have some prepared questions. Even if they ask, hey, can you send me the questions in advance? Absolutely, I'll send them to you in advance, right? Whatever it is, take the initiative, right, to learn, to grow, and it will benefit you greatly.
But also to learn how to accept rejection.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's that resilience factor
yes.
built in that,
yes.
you know, that I always give an analogy, you know, when I'm talking to my kids, they're a little bit in the younger group, so,
mm-hmm.
and I say, you know what made us tough in the neighborhood? We used to play this game called Pick 'em Up Bussin'.
Okay.
We used to just take a football and it'd be like 20 of us, and we just throw the football straight up in the air. And then if you catch that football,
right.
you better go run for the end zone and you get busted. Right?
We called it something else, but I'm not gonna say that name.
Yeah. Well, I know another word, but we got.
I'm not gonna say that name. But I remember the game though. I remember the game.
Yeah. So you know that type of game is that resilience, right? It made you tough, right? My cousins used to get us out there and say, "We're gonna make y'all tough."
Yep.
Right, so we get out here, we play this game, and we get tough. The girls were out there too now,
yeah.
you know. And I got some fast, strong girl cousins, bro, that will check you, you know.
Right.
Y'all know who y'all are if y'all listening. Y'all used to check a brother back in the day, but yeah, definitely so. And this, you know, in that is that resilience factor, right? It's understanding and taking rejection. How do you respond to rejection? You know, me, I lavish it. Give me the rejection. I'm motivated. Tell me no.
Right.
Tell me no. Right?
Right,
you tell
right.
me no, then I'm gonna make sure the person that told me no, I'm gonna make sure you see me shine, because I'm gonna take your no and I'm gonna elevate my game.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that is that being taking. My grandmother always taught me is to always, or Biggie, you know, take the negative and accentuate the positive. Right.
Yeah.
Using in hip hop terms, but the same thing
right.
my grandmother taught me. You know, just learn how, don't dwell on the negative. Right. See the positive. Right. Understand where you're lacking and then improve on that. And
Absolutely.
Then you just keep going and keep getting better. Listen, man, brother, this is so, so, so wonderful. I know we are at our time.
Yes.
I try to be respectful of everyone's time. And builders, if you're ready to ignite your signal, drop a fire emoji, wherever you are listening. Tag a fellow architect and join our movement. Paul Wilson Jr., thank you for helping us burn the playbook and build what's next.
Now, my pleasure. Great, great discussion. And hopefully I look forward to coming back at some point in the future. But again, these are topics that we got to wrestle with, engage on, because again, I believe there's some answers though, right? Where we're not without answers, and we just got to keep pressing forward together. And I think that's the key. So I appreciate you. And Alex, look forward to next time.
Oh yeah, you're most definitely welcome. And listen, we're going to issue your heroic visibility badge. Check your email, you know, present it on LinkedIn, show it off. And it's a great, great movement. We thank you for being part of the Human Signal movement. And to everyone out there, don't just watch, build in public and build with us. Till next time.